Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For months, the country waited while Iraq burned and the president said, stay the course. Today, the bipartisan Iraq Study Group finally has its say. Five Republicans and five Democrats, commissioned by Congress, led by former Secretary of State James Baker and Indiana Congressman Lee Hamilton. The day after Robert Gates tells the nation we are not winning, the Iraq Study Group delivers its long-awaited advice on what to do about that. It's a tall order to fix Iraq now, maybe taller than even this august group can deliver on, but the country and world are all ears. Up next, On Point, we'll listen as the Iraq Study Group speaks on what to do with the war in Iraq. I'll be joined in this hour by Ambassador Barbara Bodine, who spent much of her 30-year diplomatic career in the Middle East. She's with me in the studio. We're going to be listening in as the report is delivered in Washington. Ambassador Bodine, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let us go straight to the opening statement by former Congressman Democrat Lee Hamilton.
Situation in Iraq is grave and deteriorating. Violence is increasing in scope and lethality. Attacks on U.S. forces and U.S. casualties continue at an alarming rate. The Iraqi people are suffering great hardship. The democratically elected government that replaced Saddam Hussein is not adequately advancing the key issues of national reconciliation, providing basic security, or delivering essential services. Economic development is hampered. The current approach is not working, and the ability of the United States to influence events is diminishing. The United States has committed staggering resources. Our country has lost almost 2,900 Americans. 21,000 more have been wounded. The United States has spent an estimated $400 billion in Iraq, and costs could rise well over $1 trillion. Many Americans are understandably dissatisfied. Our ship of state has hit rough waters. It must now chart a new way forward. No course of action in Iraq is guaranteed to stop a slide toward chaos. Yet, in our view, not all options have been exhausted. We agree with the goal of U.S. policy in Iraq set forth by President Bush, an Iraq that can govern itself, sustain itself, and defend itself. We recommend a new approach to pursue that goal. We recommend a responsible transition. Our three most important recommendations are equally important and reinforce one another. First, a change in the primary mission of U.S. forces in Iraq that will enable the United States to begin to move its combat forces out of Iraq responsibly. Two, prompt action by the Iraqi government to achieve milestones, particularly on national reconciliation. And three, a new and enhanced diplomatic and political efforts in Iraq and in the region.
Co-chair of the Iraq Study Group, Lee Hamilton, former congressman, opening up today's session with very tough words. We pick up now with former Secretary of State James Baker.
Should create an international Iraq support group to address comprehensively the political, economic, and military matters necessary to provide stability in Iraq. That support group should include Iraq, of course, but also all of Iraq's neighbors, including Iran and Syria, the key regional states, including Egypt and the Gulf states, the United Nations Security Council PERM 5 member countries, a representative of the United Nations Secretary General, and the European Union. Given the central importance of the Arab-Israeli conflict to many countries both in and out of the region, the United States must again initiate active negotiations to achieve a stable Arab-Israeli peace on all fronts and in the manner that we outlined specifically in the report. Ladies and gentlemen, altogether in this report, we make 79 recommendations. In addition to military, political, and diplomatic recommendations, which, as Lee has said, are equally important and reinforce each other, these recommendations cover a range of other areas: criminal justice, oil, reconstruction, the United States budget process, the training of U.S. government personnel, and United States intelligence. These recommendations are important, and they will greatly increase our ability to achieve a responsible transition in Iraq. We agreed upon our recommendations after considering a full range of other approaches. I suppose some of you will have questions about some of those other approaches, so let me say a word or two about them. We do not recommend a stay-the-course solution. In our opinion, that approach is no longer viable. While we do recommend a five-fold increase in U.S. forces training Iraqi troops from, let's say, a high of 4,000 to a high of 20,000, we do not recommend increasing U.S. forces by in excess of 100,000 troops, as some have suggested. Additional fully combat-ready United States forces of that magnitude are simply not available. We have not recommended a division of Iraq into three autonomous regions based on ethnic or sectarian identities, but with a weak central government. As a practical matter, such a devolution, in our view, could not be managed on an orderly basis. And because Iraq's major cities are peopled by a mixture of warring groups, a disorderly devolution would likely result in a humanitarian disaster or a broad-based civil war. We also did not recommend a precipitous withdrawal of troops, because that might not only cause a bloodbath, it would also invite a wider regional war. The approach we do recommend has its own shortcomings. We recognize that implementing it will require a tremendous amount of political will and will require a unity of effort by government agencies. Most of all, it will require cooperation by the executive and the legislative branches of our government. Events in Iraq could overtake what we recommend. And for that reason, we believe that decisions should be made by our national leaders with some urgency. As it is now, people are being killed day after day, Iraqis and the brave American troops who are trying to help them. Struggling in a world of fear, the Iraqis themselves dare not dream. They have been liberated from the nightmare of a tyrannical order, only to face the nightmare of brutal violence. As a matter of humanitarian concern, as a matter of national interest, and as a matter of practical necessity, it is time to find a new way forward, a new approach. We believe that a constructive solution requires that a new political consensus be built, a new consensus here at home, and a new consensus abroad. And it is in that spirit that we have approached our study group's task on a bipartisan basis. So I am especially pleased to note for you that our group offers and supports each and every one of our recommendations unanimously. We, of course, recognize that some people will differ with some of these recommendations. We nevertheless hope very much that in moving forward, others will wish to continue to broaden and deepen the bipartisan spirit that has helped us come together. We'd be delighted to respond to your questions. The first hand up was the lady in the black right there.
Former Secretary of State James Baker there, unveiling the Iraq Study Group report today with his co-chair, Lee Hamilton. We will go to the questions and answers after a short break here. They're just getting the mechanics in order there in Washington. But first, let me turn to Barbara Bodine, former U.S. ambassador to Yemen. She worked in Baghdad in 2003 on reconstruction, listening with all of us to this unfolding language. And it is very tough language indeed, Ambassador Bodine.
Absolutely. I guess my first reaction to this is, wow. This is basically taking the Bush foreign policy in general, as well as its policy towards Iraq, and turning it on its head. Almost every precept of our policy up until now has been repudiated, and they're recommending that we go entirely the opposite direction.
A big booming drum here, not the kind of language easily ignored by anyone, even the President of the United States.
The President can't ignore this, and I don't think the American people or Congress will allow him to. This is comprehensive. It goes as far as how we do our budget, how we train our personnel. It brings in not just the neighbors, but the Europeans and the UN. It does talk about, I think, with a great deal of compassion, the reality of the nightmare that the Iraqi people have been going through. And that's a part of the equation that has been missing from a lot of our dialogue.
A grave and deteriorating situation, Lee Hamilton said there. The ship of state is in rough waters, spending staggering resources. The current approach not working, the Iraqi government not delivering, could hardly be more critical. It almost sounds like a kind of regency, like a government reaching over the shoulder of the President of the United States.
It does, if not go over him, certainly goes around him or puts him to one side. This is basically saying that everything has to be taken down to zero and built back up again. And that he made it very, very clear that there is a great deal of urgency, that this is not something that can be talked about forever. It cannot be deconstructed. It has to be taken as a whole, and we have to move out now.
We are listening in today on the unveiling of the big report of the Iraq Study Group. James Baker and Lee Hamilton at the microphone answering questions. Lee Hamilton saying, all is not lost, but very tough words. And as my guest, Barbara Bodine, former ambassador in the Middle East, says, looks like, sounds like turning Bush policy on its head. Let's listen in.
If we're united, executive and legislative, but also the American people are supporting the foreign policy.
And I'm going to get to the back of the room. Yeah.
Mr. Secretary, Congressman Hamilton, Commissioners, Major Garrett, Fox News. Gentlemen, Madam Supreme Court Justice, I've only had a chance to briefly read this, but I searched in vain for a phrase or a word the President uses routinely, victory. And I'm wondering if it is fair to say that the conclusion of the Iraq Study Group is that victory is so difficult to define right now, the more important and more immediate policy objective for the United States government and the Iraqi government is to avoid catastrophe in Iraq. And if that is, in fact, what the Iraq Study Group is saying, isn't that going to be a part of an elaborate communication process with the American people to rally around avoiding catastrophe as opposed to rallying around definable victory?
We stayed away from a lot of terms that had been bandied about during the campaign season in the political debate. You probably won't find civil war in here either. You won't find victory, but you will find success. And so I think what our report says on balance, if you read it, is that if you implement the recommendations we make, the chances for success in Iraq will be improved. Yes, sir. Okay.
You're certainly a group of distinguished elder statesmen, but tell me, why should the President give more weight to what you all have said, given that you, as I understand, you went to Iraq once, with the exception of Senator Robb, none of you made it out of the green zone. Why should he give your recommendations any more weight than what he's hearing from his commanders on the ground in Iraq?
The members of the Iraq Study Group are, public servants of a distinguished record. We don't pretend now, we did not pretend at the start, to have expertise. We've put in a very intensive period of time. We have some judgments about the way this country works and the way our government works, and some considerable experience within our group on the Middle East. We recognize that our report is only one. There will be many recommendations. But the report will stand on its own and will be accepted or rejected on its own. We tried to set forth here achievable goals. It's a very easy thing to look at Iraq and sit down and set out a number of goals that really have no chance at all of being implemented. We took a very pragmatic approach because all of these people up here are pragmatic public officials. We also hope that our report will help bridge the divide in this country on the Iraq war and will at least be a beginning of a consensus here, because without that consensus in the country, we do not think ultimately you can succeed in Iraq.
Let me add to that that this report by this bunch of has-beens up here is the only bipartisan report that's out there. Yes, to Barbara.
Barbara Slavin of USA Today. One of the aspects of your report is outreach to Iran.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're listening in on this morning's report of the Iraq Study Group, James Baker and Lee Hamilton, before the press on Capitol Hill.
And I notice that you've taken the nuclear issue out of the equation. You say that should not be discussed in connection with Iraq. Why would the Iranians agree to come to a table and talk about Iraq unless the nuclear question and other questions were addressed?
Why did they agree to come to the table and talk about Afghanistan without talking about the nuclear issue? They did, and they helped us, and it was important. In our discussions with them, and the report points this out, Barbara, we didn't get the feeling that Iran is chomping at the bit to come to the table with us to talk about Iraq. And in fact, we say there we think they very well might not. But we also say we ought to put it to them, though, so that the world will see the rejectionist attitude that they are projecting by that action. With respect to Syria, there's some strong indications that they would be in a position, if we were able to enter into a constructive dialogue with them, that they would be in a position to help us and might want to help us. But we're specific in the report. There must be 10 or 11 or 12 things we say there that that we will be asking of Syria. The suggestion that somehow we're going to sacrifice the investigations of Pierre Gamal and assassinations of Gamal and Hariri or others is just ridiculous. So we're talking not about talking to be talking. We're talking about tough diplomacy. The hand is behind you there.
May I simply add to that I think all of us feel here that both Iran and Syria have a lot of influence in the region and have a lot of impact on Iraq. Iran probably today is the national power that has the single greatest influence inside Iraq today. We will be criticized, I'm sure, for talking with our adversaries, but I do not see how you solve these problems without talking to them. We have no exaggerated expectations of what can happen. We recognize that it's not likely to happen quickly. On the other hand, if you don't talk to them, we don't see much likelihood of progress being made. You cannot look at this area of the world and pick and choose among the countries that you're going to deal with. Everything in the Middle East is connected to everything else. And this diplomatic initiative that we have put forward recognizes that.
And let me just add to that, if I might, that for 40 years we talked to the Soviet Union during a time when they were committed to wiping us off the face of the earth. So you talk to your enemies, not just your friends. Now, who's right here?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, listening in on the Iraq Study Group report from Washington.
This notion of significantly increasing the number of U.S. troops embedded with Iraqis, does that imply a top-line increase to the 139,000 troops in Iraq right now, or simply shifting a greater proportion of those in Iraq to embedded units?
Secretary Perry will answer that for us.
We're talking about an increase from about 3,000 or 4,000 we now have to maybe 15 to 20,000. So there's about an extra 10,000 troops we're talking about. Those can come out of the combat brigades that we now have there if the commanders in place determine that's the best way to do it. There is a training time involved, so there will be some lag time, but it can be done, I believe, with the existing combat brigade troops. Part of this plan involves pulling the combat brigade, redeploying the combat brigade to the United States. As they redeploy, some of the troops can be held back for doing this mission.
Gentleman with the beard.
Thank you. Spencer Ackerman with the American Prospect. You write that by the first quarter of 2008, subject to unexpected developments, all combat brigades not necessary for force protection could be out of Iraq. What does that mean for who's left in Iraq, what residual force there will be for the training mission, and to the degree foreseeable, how long do you anticipate that training mission lasting?
It would indicate that there would be a considerable force there, which would include logistical support. It would include, obviously, the trainers themselves. Mm-hmm. Force protection. We don't say in terms of numbers specifically, but it would be adequate.
Former Attorney General Edwin
Meese speaking. Those responsibilities. It will take longer for the Iraqi army to develop its own logistical and support capabilities, in addition to intelligence, communication, transport, things such as that. So it means that over a sustained period of time, we will be backing up those trainers, particularly with ready response forces and special forces, the latter being also devoted to dealing with al-Qaeda in Iraq and other terrorist groups.
Way back in the back, I see a hand, blue sleeve. You, yes, stand up. You. You're, you're looking around. Stand. two of them stood up.
Pat McGrath, Fox 5. You said urgent action is needed because events could overtake what we recommend. Could you be more specific about what those events are, and might they make your report ultimately moot?
Well, from the very beginning, we recognized that events could overtake our work, could overtake policy, American policy in the region. And that may still be the case. We could look at your reports tomorrow and find out that it has happened. I think the recommendations that we make here would apply to any government of Iraq, not just the one in power today.
Former Congressman Lee Hamilton speaking.
What are the events? Well, the events are just anarchy, total chaos, the collapse of the government without a new government taking its place, and rampant violence throughout the country. We do not underestimate the difficulties of the problems in Iraq, and we do not underestimate the possibilities that could happen. We've got a specific situation in front of us now. We have to try to deal with it the best we can, and that's what our report is aimed for.
Second fellow that stood up back there that didn't get to ask a question.
Ron Campius from JTA. You say in the executive summary that you recommend the renewed diplomatic effort, and you talk about incentives and disincentives to Iran and Syria, and especially on the Arab-Israeli front. Yet the Bush administration has said that it's offered Syria and Iran in different contexts incentives and disincentives, and it also says that it is actively engaged on the Palestinian-Israeli front. What particularly are you recommending?
Well, it's pretty specific. If you go to the report itself and read beyond the executive summary, we're quite specific in what we recommend vis-a-vis the Syria-Lebanon track. We're also specific about what we recommend on the Israel-Palestinian track. So I refer you to the report. I could answer it, but I think we'd be wasting the time of others. You can read it in the report. Doyle?
Doyle McManus, Los Angeles Times. All of you have considerable experience at helping presidents change course when they find themselves in a blind alley. What do you intend to do from now on to help President Bush embrace the wisdom of all of your recommendations? He's already expressed some discomfort with several of them, including engaging Syria and Iran, and including giving the Iraqi government what might look like ultimata for changing its performance with the negative outcome of a troop disengagement if they don't comply. How will you act from now on to get him closer to where you are?
I think it would be appropriate for President Clinton's former chief of staff to answer that question.
As I told the president this morning, this war has badly divided this country. It's divided Republicans from Democrats and, to some extent, the president from the people.
Leon Panetta speaking.
And policy sometimes with those divisions has been reduced to a 30-second soundbite that runs the gamut from victory or stay the course to cut and run. And what this group tried to do, five Democrats and five Republicans, is to try to set aside those code words and those divisions and try to look at the realities that are there. And I would suggest to the president and to the American people that if you look at the realities of what's taking place there, the fact that violence is out of control, the fact that Iraqis ultimately have to control their future, they have to take care of security, they've got to deal with the region in that area, that ultimately you can find consensus here. This country cannot be at war and be as divided as we are today. You've got to unify this country. And I'd suggest to the president that what we did in this group can perhaps serve as an example to try to pull together the leadership of the Congress and try to focus on the recommendations that we've made. We have made a terrible commitment in Iraq in terms of our blood and our treasure.
Former White House Chief of Staff to Bill Clinton, Leon Panetta there, one of the 10 members of the bipartisan Iraq Study Group reporting this morning. From Washington, Ambassador Barbara Bodine joins me in the studio listening along, and right now from Washington, Assistant Managing Editor of Time Magazine, Michael Duffy here as well. Michael Duffy, the cover of your magazine this week, you wrote the story, Why Bush Has to Listen. Is the president ready to listen to this?
That is the principle that in my mind he has to accomplish. I think our covered line was actually why Bush is listening. It's pretty clear to us that whatever they may be saying about what they think about this, they are already, their backfield is already in motion on the diplomatic front. And to some extent, they'd already co-opted the title of this thing last week. I think it's very important for them politically not to be seen as being pushed around too quickly, but I think there's no question that they are moving is on a bunch of different fronts here to get there, and when we look back on this period in a couple of weeks, we will see that even more clearly. This is now that I've read this report, practically a spanking. It suggests
a spanking for the president.
Yeah, 79 different ways they want to overhaul the defense and foreign policy. Even the clearly the communications inside the White House are discussed here with the Iraqi government. There's just a whole variety of proposals in defense and foreign policy that are on the table here. It is nothing less than, I think, a repudiation of 3 or 4 years' worth of national security policy.
Barbara Bodine, a radical moment for this administration.
Absolutely. And I agree with Mr. Duffy that the administration is not going to be able to ignore the recommendations. They are far-reaching. They are as much a challenge to how we are structured ourselves as it is a challenge to how the Iraqis structure themselves.
Is the White House structured to take this kind of strong medicine on board?
I think that the NSC is. And I think that there has already been some movement. But I think that, with the change in our own political landscape after the election, this is going to have to move forward. One of the words that they used repeatedly that I thought was very interesting was they kept talking about a responsible way of dealing with this, not just a realistic, but a responsible way, very measured. And I think one of the things, and this gets to the issue of how can they take it on board and can they make this real, is I think that they're going to need to appoint someone who is the special envoy, czar, implementer, whatever you want to call him, whose job it is to make this actually happen.
Something more than a new Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates.
Somebody who is focused solely on this issue.
We are listening in on this morning's unveiling of the big report of the Iraq Study Group. James Baker and Lee Hamilton at the podium, along with them, all 8 of the other members, bipartisan, delivering today a very stern message to the White House on Iraq, a grave and deteriorating situation in Iraq, and some big proposals on what will follow. Michael Duffy of Time Magazine. magazine is listening along with us, as is former U.S. ambassador to Yemen, Barbara Bodine. She worked in Baghdad right after the invasion. We want to listen to more of the Q&A on Capitol Hill this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Jim Axelrod with CBS. Of all the distinguished men and women in front of us today, you have the closest relationship with the Bush family. When you recommend something like engaging Iran, which the president has been very clear will only happen after they verifiably suspend, it seems to set up the need for the president to pull a 180. Does he have the capacity to do that, in your opinion, sir?
You know, I worked for four presidents, and I used to get questions all the time. Tell me about this president versus that president or the other president, and I never put presidents I worked for on the couch. So I'm not going to answer that, because that would mean I'd have to psychologically analyze the inner workings of his mind, and I don't do that. The lady right here.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Trish Turner with Fox. Time and again, as we sit in rooms like this and as early as yesterday, we've heard members ask various members of the administration and in the military that ask them, it's been going 4 years now and training's been going on for 4 years and something is not working. I wonder if you could answer that question, why to now training does not seem to be working with Iraq forces, and what's the expectation that it will somehow improve? Is that just by increasing the numbers of troops embedded with our forces?
Secretary Perry can talk to you about why the training mission has not worked as well as had been hoped in the past, and then maybe General Meese would have something to say. And we'll take one more question after this, and it's the lady with the glasses there that I was trying to call on.
Former Secretary of Defense William Perry.
First of all, the training was slow to get started, but it's been going on, I think, very effectively in the last year or so. But the training is a basic training, and as the Iraqi soldiers go into their units, they don't have any combat skills, they don't have any leadership. So we believe that the thing that they needed at this stage to be able to come up to the task they have is effectively on-the-job training, and that on-the-job training can be best done when they have role models of American teams in front of them. So the key to doing this, what we thought, was to substantially increase the number of American military teams embedded in Iraqi units right down to the company level. This, I think, can make a big difference in effectiveness.
Which is something that hasn't been tried before, down to the company level. General Meade?
We have talked also in the report about increasing the amount of training that the trainers themselves receive and special selection of trainers from units both overseas and in the United States.
Former Attorney General Edwin Meese.
Career-enhancing assignments for military trainers to be in these particular positions.
Senator Robb is going to...
Let me just say that this represents a dramatic change in the way we have been doing business. It is one that the senior military leadership of this country are supportive of, believe can be very helpful, but it represents a clear break from the past tradition of being the principal combat unit to a role of combat support, but by embedding our forces at greater levels in the Iraqi military, we will have more capacity, more trust, more capability in the Iraqi forces, but it will have the U.S. Technical skills, all of the other support missions, as well as the outside support, and it will provide a more robust capability with an Iraqi face on it. This will diminish the American face that's currently so much associated with our presence, give it an Iraqi face, but give them the capability on which they still depend on the United States of America to fulfill our missions.
One final question.
Struggling with the microphone a little bit at the Capitol Hill press conference of the Iraq Study Group. Question not clearly audible, but we'll hear the response soon from James Baker and Lee Hamilton.
We understand the possibilities that things fall apart. That's not where we are now. And we have addressed our recommendations
Lee
to
Hamilton
where
responding
we are.
Here.
And with recommendations we hope are achievable. In the context of the political environment, both in this country and in Iraq as well. Now, if those circumstances change radically, if things fall apart, whatever that may mean, then we'll simply have to make adjustments to it. But we are not there yet.
Also, I might point out that in the report, we call for, we note the fact that there will be, for quite some time, a robust American force presence, both in Iraq and in the region, because of our interest in preventing just such a result, and also because of our national security interests in the region. Thank you all very much.
And there, the long-awaited report of the Iraq Study Group delivered today over breakfast with the president this morning in a news conference on Capitol Hill. Former Secretary of State, often referred to as consigliere to the Bush family, James Baker, there at the podium, along with his co-chair, former Congressman Lee Hamilton of Indiana, and the full Iraq Study Group, 10 members in all, 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, arrayed around them as they come out very tough on the Iraq War. I'm joined by Ambassador Barbara Bodine. She was ambassador to Yemen, spent decades in the Middle East, was in Baghdad shortly after the invasion in charge of reconstruction there. She's with me in the studio. And in Washington, Michael Duffy, assistant managing editor for Time magazine. Ambassador Bodine, Michael Duffy, we'll go to the substance of this, but once more, let's go to just the kind of delivery of this message. Michael Duffy, you described it as a spanking for the president. Ambassador Bodine, there's a kind of thunder in these words.
It's, I guess I would almost call it a quiet thunder. They didn't rant. They didn't rave. They were very direct in their criticism, but they weren't, I guess, ad hominem. But it had the kind of quiet focus to it that, to use Michael Duffy's spanking analogy, you know, if your parents talk to you in a calm, clear, low voice, you know you need to really listen to them, that they're very, very serious.
Michael Duffy, I don't want to get caught up in a psychodrama here, but this is the former Secretary of State.
It's too late.
The president called him Jimmy Baker, but this is James Baker standing tall, Ann Lee Hamilton. You call it a spanking for a president who surely will not like that framework. How can the White House respond? Your headline is, Why Bush is Listening. Can he listen to this?
Well, again, we have to watch what they say. I'm sorry, watch what they do, not what they say. This is a time to pay close attention to their actions. I'm talking about the White House now, not their words. I think it would be unreasonable to expect, as with your 16-year-old kid, to expect an immediate turnaround in behavior. But I think over the next, you know, couple of days and weeks, we're going to see them slowly, and we already have, adopt some of these proposals. The White House is very keen on optics at the moment. They don't want to be seen as having been, you know, having been bailed out or rescued by, you know, an older generation here.
But isn't that what this sounds like?
Sounds like. That's what it is. I mean, it's not a question of sounds like. This is very much a shadow government or shadow State Department and foreign policy establishment coming in and saying that's not the way we do things, and we're not going to do it anymore if you know. And I think the Congress will step up very smartly behind some of this stuff, and we're going to see it happen. I think the thing to be cautious about isn't just about at the White House's, but all over Washington. This is a city that hasn't done a lot of big reforms of anything in 10 or 12 years. It doesn't work very well at the moment, hasn't for a long time, doesn't come together on things. That's why we often have to farm this stuff out to commissions. It will be almost as difficult for the executive branch as the congressional branch to make progress on these fronts. But as a piece of theater, this is quite dramatic.
The situation in Washington feels like going fluid today, and some very big voices coming in. There's the theater around it. Michael Duffy, when you look at the main elements of what's actually being proposed here, what would you point to as the top 2, 3, 4?
Well, there are two big pieces. The first is a diplomatic overhaul, which says essentially that the United States government has to engage diplomatically with not just Iran and Syria, but all of the countries in the Middle East, as well as our European partners, to try to bring some stability to Iraq. Secondly, it says inside of Iraq, there has to be a much greater effort on reconciliation of the political parties. That's a diplomatic effort as well. And it says, thirdly, on the diplomatic front, we have to do more as a government here in the United States to rekindle the peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians. That's the diplomatic piece. The military piece, which is comparatively smaller in terms of sheer, you know, size and undertaking, draws a very clear blueprint, and I wouldn't go beyond blueprint, and says, you know, the U.S. is going to pull out of this country if the government can of Baghdad can restore stability, and if it cannot restore stability, we're going to pull out faster. It's a sticks and sticks approach. It's not carrots and sticks, although there's some carrots in there. It's basically a performance-based model that says, unless you get your act together, Baghdad, we're out of here.
And what's the timetable look like?
They left that blank because they couldn't get consensus on that. And that's one of the pieces of unhappiness inside the commission. The Democrats wanted a clear, firm timetable on when the Baghdad government had to make that progress. They didn't get that out of the Republicans, and they left it vague. This is, again, a recommendation. It's not policy. It's a recommendation.
Barbara Bodine, Ambassador Bodine, do you hear the possibility, not a victory, James Baker was clear in saying here, but of a chance of success in the rather large shift being described here in policy?
Yes, I think that they have put out some ideas that, as Congressman Hamilton said, the guarantee of success is not there if we don't make these fundamental changes. And this is far more than theater. This is fundamental substance and policy, that success is possible. Now, we have defined success down considerably from where we were several years ago.
Down to avoiding chaos and regional meltdown.
Basically, anything short of a disaster. On the positive, it's described as being able to govern, being able to sustain, and being able to defend. Those are very basic criteria of a functioning state.
Though a lot more than is happening right now.
Absolutely. No, it would be a major step forward if we could get to those three criteria.
Govern, sustain, and defend. But getting to that, do you see that in talking with Iran and Syria,
yes,
in embedding U.S. troops more deeply in the Iraqi military? Does that sound like it could actually get us over that minimal hump?
I think it does, in the sense that it shifts us very much from a military solution to a political and diplomatic and economic solution. It shifts it from something that has an American face, an American responsibility, what we're doing, what our timetable is, and moving it over to the Iraqis, not in the sense of dumping it on them and leaving, but transitioning to a more Iraqi face and a more normal relationship. You have to bring in the Syrians and the Iranians. If they are the ones causing the mischief, then obviously you have to bring them in order to get this thing fixed. Bringing in the Gulf states, yes, this is the structure that could actually get Iraq to success. It won't be easy. It won't be fast. This Iraq support group, which is supposed to come from this, is not going to be a one-time event. This is going to be a long-haul process. But this gets us out of a unilateral U.S. military solution and into an international diplomatic and economic solution.
A big change if it happens. I want to bring a military voice in here for just a moment. Michael Duffy, Ambassador Bodine. We're joined from 29 Palms, California by Seth Moulton, captain in the Marine Corps Reserves. He's training troops right now that are headed to Iraq. He's worked on training Iraqi troops. Captain Moulton, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
You, I'm sure, have listened to everything that we heard this morning. Do you hear the makings of new marching orders here?
Well, absolutely. I think that we've been talking for some time about the importance of putting more advisors, more emphasis on advisors and certainly more numbers in Iraq. But in terms of actually making a policy change, that hasn't really happened. And we have marginally more advisors, slightly better trained, but there hasn't been a dramatic change in our strategy that I think we really need.
And what's your first response to the Iraq Study Group's report? Are you heartened? Are you confused? Does this sound like something the U.S. military can act on toward success?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's very heartening. I think it's very heartening that there's some consensus out there that there really isn't a way forward, because I think that a lot of America right now feels, quite frankly, a bit lost. And although the Marines and soldiers on the ground in Iraq are very committed to the mission before them, it's frustrating when you don't see progress in the bigger sense, in the larger context.
Michael Duffy with Time Magazine, what can we anticipate in the days ahead now as the White House tries to get its hands around this?
Well, I think we, again, have to think in terms of weeks, not days here. Mm-hmm. They're talking at the White House about a speech in which they reset the policy, and I suspect that will be particularly in military and diplomatic terms. Some of this stuff can be done quietly and doesn't need a big public rollout. But a report, and this is going to go on for three or four more days, this rollout is going to affect the president's political standing also. And so I think they'll want to answer it. They can't wait until State of the Union. They were having a conversation over the weekend about whether to do it before Christmas or after Christmas, some kind of speech. We know that they've adopted a name for their restart. It's called A New Way Forward, which is based on the name of this proposal. So I think, again, you know, watch what they do, not what they say, because they're very keen to make sure that they don't cave and capitulate, because they have their own political base to be concerned about.
Yep.
Ambassador, I believe it will happen.
Ambassador Bodine, you said off mic that if this were a parliamentary system, this would amount to George Bush being out. It is not. He's got Robert Gates, by all signs, headed in as Secretary of Defense. Is that the key link here? He was on the Iraq study group himself.
Exactly. What really will take this from a wonderful report with great policy ideas and into the realm of implementation is Robert Gates over at Department of Defense. A lot of this is where the rubber meets the road, and Bob Gates is there.
A huge day in Washington on the messaging front. It will be fascinating to see how that city and the White House in particular respond. I want to thank my guest today, Captain Seth Moulton with the Marine Corps Reserves in California. Captain Moulton, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Michael Duffy, Assistant Managing Editor at Time Magazine in Washington. Michael, thanks for being here.
You bet.
And Ambassador Barbara Bodine, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.